The Six Pillars of Freedom on Freedom 970 KUFO AM Portland.
Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, this is Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm, filling in for Chuck Price, who's going to be here in just a moment. I think that he got caught up in a little bit of traffic. And here in the studio with me is Kevin Stege of the Baker Colson firm. How are you this morning, Kevin?
I'm very good, Carl. Did you have a good Christmas?
I did indeed. And you?
Very good.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
That's great. I noticed that this morning it's getting a little colder down here. I kind of wandered around the block to get a cup of coffee, and it's getting a little chilly here.
Yeah, you got to get in quick.
Yeah. Oh, I see Mr. Price has arrived.
Well, he's arrived. The engineer's arrived. We finally got snafu worked out and got the engineer up and rolling, and we're moving. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Welcome to our year-end show where we get a chance to got to call it like it is. We get to the end of our year-end show, and it's been a good year. How about for you guys?
It's been a fine year, I think. It's been busy and busier.
Never ask me a question when I'm drinking my coffee, Chuck.
I noticed that.
Okay.
Yeah. You didn't spill it, though.
That's right. Yeah, yes, but it has been a good year. The Lord's been good.
Well, you know, and we're heading into a brand new year, a brand new halfway point of the decade. And it's a good time to look back, but it's a great time to also look forward and to say that if you're the type of person that does planning, this is the time when you want to be planning your next year and putting together your goals and your objectives for the next year, whether it be for retirement planning or business planning or tax planning or legal planning. This is the time to really kind of think about it and think about what you want to do, because there's no time like the present to get that moving and get it done. If you don't do it, you'll blink and we'll be into March or April. And
you
that's just how it goes.
I couldn't agree more with you there, Chuck, because we've often talked about the procrastination as one of the biggest obstacles to good planning. And one of the things we find is that there are certain events that seem to trigger their people's desires to do estate planning. Among them include vacations out of the state or out of the country. All of a sudden, it's 3 days before they are getting on the airplane, and they say, "Oh my gosh, I got to get my will done." I got news for you. That's really difficult, and especially if you have, I mean, we can do it sometimes, but a lot of times it's not a very it's a minimalist approach in those kinds of things. So try to think of those a little earlier. The other one that's even worse sometimes, even though I understand sometimes you can't just get around this, is I'm in the hospital and I'm going to be having surgery tomorrow, and I need you to, get me something here.
I was going to bring it up, Carl, but I remember distinctly a client of yours and mine that actually happened to you.
Oh, at the extreme, yes, indeed. I get this frantic call from the trustee in this case, and telling me that the client is in the hospital out at St. Vincent's, and the surgeon is waiting to do surgery that she needs to have, and the surgeon is walking up and down the hallway. And the client is refusing medical treatment until she gets to change her trust, her distribution in the trust. So I went out there with my little portable mechanical typewriter and asked her what she wanted and typed it up, and mistakes and all, and had her sign it and witness it. And we had a bunch of, we had all the people there to do all that stuff. And I made her promise that as soon as she was better, she'd be in my office and we'd do it right. And the surgeon is walking around waiting to do this, and I'm sitting there banging on this typewriter. A little odd, but nonetheless, fortunately, she did recover from the surgery quite well, and ultimately we did get everything settled in a proper way.
Beware of partnership agreements written on cocktail napkins and wills written on hospital gowns.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't want that.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, but sometimes, sometimes in that case, it was a good thing that she finally got some of that stuff done, but... That's a little poor planning there that needs to be done more at a time when you can be calm and relaxed and have your thoughts about what you're really doing in your planning instead of an emergency. Well, listen, you're listening to Investing Simplified. This is your opportunity to ask a question. We have in studio estate planning attorney Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm and CPA Kevin Stege with the Baker Coastal CPA firm, and I'm Chuck Price, registered investment advisor firm. Here in Portland, Oregon. So give us a call at toll-free 800-990-0750. That's 800-990-0750. And toll-free 503-417-7626. 503-417-7626. And I tell people this over and over again, there's no foolish question when it comes to your money. And one of the things that totally drives me crazy, and I'm kind of glad to kind of hear, I don't know if you gentlemen had a chance to hear the radio coming in, but they had on the Watchdog of Wall Street on before us. And and it's one of my favorite shows. I used to like listening to it before. It used to be on an hour before we were on. And this morning it was on right before our show. And I kind of enjoy listening to him. And it was a very good show. But he said a couple of things that really hit a nerve with me. And one of them is I recently talked to somebody this past week about their investments, and they actually had an advisor tell them, you ask too many questions. You need to just trust us and do this. And here's what I would say to everybody out there. If an advisor says to you, you ask too many questions, you need to just trust us. I'll tell you what I'd do. I'd walk out of the damn office and I would leave and I wouldn't trust them. Because if people will not answer your questions, that tells you there is something wrong. If they're not explaining the investment, especially when they're asking you to write an awful big check to their firm, you want to ask them questions. You have a right. You have a right to know what you're giving somebody a check for. And if an advisor is not explaining to you, do not buy it. Do not give them a check. And that is the same with any professional you're dealing with. If you're hiring a contractor and the contractor's not going to explain to you what they're doing, they're just saying, trust me, it's going to look great. I'd trust them all right. I'd give me another contractor, you know. And I'm just saying this about advisors. I heard him talking about it, one of the most misused things, and I've discussed this numerous times on here, is about annuities, because I see annuities totally missold all the time. All the time. And it makes me disgusted, because a lot of stuff that's going on, there's 13 states now that have enacted laws and regulations on the selling of annuities, particularly to seniors. And the people who really get abused on this are the elder. And to me, it's a pure elder abuse situation where you're shoving somebody 80 years old, you're scaring them to death to put their money into an annuity that's tied up for 10 years, and their income benefit isn't going to kick in until they're 90, and you're scaring them to death that they're going to lose their money, and here it's the money safe. Well, you know, the rate of return they're going to get on that money is very, very small. They're going to be fortunate if they get a 3% return. I guess they'll sleep at night because their money's safe, but it's tied up. I don't know. I just don't understand that. I think when people, if somebody's using emotion of scaring you of losing your money, all investments have risk. The thing is, an insurance contract isn't an investment. It's an insurance contract. And every insurance has limitations and requirements under state regulations. There's no magic. Nobody has a magic bullet that is so much better than everybody else.
And the devil's in the details and the definitions in all of those insurance contracts.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know and I know very well.
You know, interestingly enough, insurance contracts, there was a long or some time ago, they came out with quite a push to make them more easy to read, more, you know, user-friendly. And they did, actually, in some respects. However, they made it simpler to read, but they split the things up into definitions and conditions and exclusions and coverages and circumstances, and they're not necessarily all in the same place. So what you end up doing is you absolutely positively have to read the whole policy. Otherwise, you don't really know what it covers and what it doesn't. And even then, by that time, you've forgotten what you read on the first 10 pages. So, you try to get to the last 10 pages, and it's pretty hard to remember. And I found that in analyzing insurance contracts is one of the most difficult things that a lawyer can do, because we have to sit down at the beginning and, you end up kind of with a flow chart kind of thing, trying to figure out, what's happening in those things. The language they use is generally pretty good, but the way it's structured makes it very difficult to follow.
Real estate closing statements they've made easier over the last few years, I don't know how long, to really analyze where your fees are going, so on and so forth. It's still difficult, but it's better than it used to be. And, in a similar scenario is I had a client that had a while back a single member 401k. And had set this up, had just got it going. And the statements that this large company that you would know were sending out, you had no idea what they were charging for fees and for what and for how much. And I had to back into them after looking at all of the monthly statements and come to find out it was for a single member 401k, it was they were paying well over $1,000 to maintain this thing and then some. And I don't, went up from there, and just not a good situation for a single member 401k. Shouldn't have been that much.
Yeah, I mean, there's really two fees you got to look at. One is the administration fee and the actual tax qualification fee.
That's the one
that they may
about.
Charge. Yeah, which some of them are crazy.
Yeah,
and then there might be an investment fee. An investment fee is totally different than those other two, and you really got to look at what the fees are in the thing. I thought I'd kind of give a little quick review here of the year, but I'm going to kind of also do it two ways. I'm going to talk first of all about that we probably have had one of the best years in the market that we've had in a long time. We've hit all-time highs. And I kind of did this little 2014 review. The Dow Jones closed on 12/31/13 at 16,576.66. Now, since this is our last show of 2014, we're doing our year-end show right here. So for all intents and purposes, the Dow ended on 12/26, 2014 at 18,053.71. So the Dow was up a whopping 1,477.05, or 8.91% for the year. That is a great rate and is very, very close to the 80-year average prior to the turn of the century. So that is just getting back to normal. And I want to stress this, because I hear all this exuberance about, wow, how great the market is and how great it's running. And you know what? This year we just did the average year for the 80 years previous to the turn of the century. And the reason they're saying that is because since the turn of the century, real rates of return have sucked. They've not been there. They've just not been there. And then if you look at the S&P 500, now they did exceed their 80-year average, because their 80-year average is about 10%. The S&P closed at 1,848.36 on 12/31/13, and on 12/26/14 closed at 2,088.77. It was up 240.41. That's a 13.01%. That is a great year for the S&P 500. It's a very great year. However, I would caution everybody who invests because, really, since the turn of the century, our S&P 500 really is S&P 500 growth stocks is an international fund. It's not an American fund. Those stocks all do a lot of business outside the United States, and foreign funds are have been, the 80 years previous, more volatile than American, you know, and because they have countries that have, you know, government gets thrown over, new government comes in, you really never know what's going to happen. You really wouldn't want to own property in some of those countries because you may not get to keep it very long if new ownership comes in, meaning a new president. And so it's a whole different ballgame than investing in America. We've been very, very fortunate for the last 200 and some odd years. We've not had that happen in our country. We've not had a change of government from that standpoint where property was seized and values were taken over. So we've been very, very blessed from that standpoint. But following that up, and if you just think about the Dow Jones this year having a 8.91% return, I want to point out that if we go back and look at the Dow Jones and we go back to the correction of 10907 when the Dow was at 14,164, we're actually up 3.81% per year from that time. And if we go back to 12/31/99, so the turn of the century, the Dow Jones is up 4%, about almost 50% of what it was the 80 years before. So you just got to be realistic about it. Same thing with the S&P 500. S&P 500, like I said, did 13% this year. But if we go back and look at the S&P, and the S&P closed at 1565.15 on 10907, it was up 464. That's less than 50% of what it's done the 80 years before. And if we go back to 12/31/99, the S&P is only up 3.02% per year. So those are not numbers. And the reason I mentioned to you is I really think long-term the best is yet to come because we're so far below what we really had happen. Unfortunately, I don't know if you gentlemen read your latest Harry Dent newsletter, but Harry almost sounded like the Grinch in his latest newsletter because he said, enjoy this Christmas and enjoy this year-end number because it's probably going to be the best one you're going to have in many years to come. And if you've been listening to the program and listened to Harry Dent, he's been saying for some time, when we break through the highs, and I know the number he had on the S&P was 2,000. We broke through that some time ago, but he said about 18.5 on the Dow, and we haven't hit there yet, but we're going to get there. And when we do, I think you want to be, you want to maybe take a conservative approach with your assets because you may see a big decline coming, like a freight train.
And that's what I was going to ask you. Even though you've had a fairly conservative approach and look at the future very conservatively, doesn't mean you haven't been in the markets this last year and taking advantage. It just means that you are in a position where you can get out quickly if need be. Is that correct?
I can tell you for our seniors and people who, with their serious money, we've been in a very, very conservative basis and totally out of the equity market this year. And mainly because when you have the equity market, when you're retired or you have money that you have to count on, you cannot afford a 9% swing in a week. I mean, you can, but it can cause a little bit of, you know, you might need the Pepto-Bismol looking at your portfolio. And the real question is when you're retired, can you accept a swing of, you know, 9 to 10% in a week on your portfolio? And most people, if they're honest with themselves, you know, people always want to say, well, gee, I could have made 9% if I had been in the Dow Jones, or I could have made, you know, I could have made 13% if I was in the S&P. Yeah, you could have. You could have. But if this is your serious money, do you really want to take that risk that next year you could be down 32%? I mean, if you're retired, I don't think so. You can't afford the 5 to 7 year recovery. And what people need to realize is, unfortunately, we've been on a 14-year recovery because the rate of return in the equity markets have not been there. They've been right around 4%. And 4% is not a historically great number. Well, listen, if you've got a question about the market, or you got a question about the law, or a question about taxes, we're doing our year-end show. You're listening to Investing Simplified. We're going to take a quick break here and come back with Carl's comments, but give us a call at 503-417-7626, 503-417-7626, and toll-free 800-990-0750. Give us a call and ask a question.
We do Investing Simplified.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm. And this is for here.
Send lawyers, guns, and money.
With an extra loud music. And anyway, we're here on the Investing Simplified show. And we're going to get back to you about Carl's comments. And today, I want to talk about a kind of an interesting thing, and I know this is going to be near and dear to Chuck's heart because he asked me a question about it the other day, and I didn't give him a thorough answer. But there are a lot of times when people have a substantial estate, they want to be able to get some of the estate, some of their assets out of the estate so that they minimize their estate taxes when they die. And there are a number of ways to doing that, and one of them is gifting, is giving stuff away. And that has some problems to a certain extent, too. Well, there's a device that's called a Qualified Personal Residence Trust, and it's CUPERT for short, and which sounds to me like a breakfast cereal or a little toy or cartoon character or something, but CUPERT, and Qualified Personal Residence Trust. And basically what this is, what happens is you transfer your family home into a trust for a period of years. And then at the end of those years, it automatically goes to the kids, or usually the kids. It doesn't necessarily have to go to the kids, but usually goes to the kids. And the idea behind that is that it allows you to minimize the gift tax to a certain extent. In other words, how it makes it a smaller gift than it would be otherwise. That's basically what is happening there. However, I wanted to. It's very difficult to calculate, and that's where I wanted to touch base with Kevin, because I just know you're going to love this, because this comes right out of the tax code, and this is how they calculate this thing.
He lays awake at night thinking about things coming out of the tax code.
I wanted you to see why it's so important to be a CPA, because here's the steps in the calculations. Find the Table B income interest factor for the appropriate trust term and the applicable federal rate for the month during which the transfer of the trust occurs. 2, multiply the factor obtained in step 1 by the full fair market value of the trust property. This is the value of the grantor's retained income interest. Step 3, Subtract the value of the grantor's retained income interest from the full fair market value of the property transferred to the trust. This amount is the value that the remainder gift interest would have if the grantor had not retained a reversionary interest. Steps 4 through 7, reduce the value of the remainder interest to reflect the effect of the contingent reversion, et cetera, et cetera. That was, it goes down through step 7. I won't read anymore. It's just too painful.
This is a closed course. Please do not try this calculation.
Yeah,
at home.
do not try. This is right. This is do not try this. These are done by professionals, and do not do this at home. You know, kind of thing.
Well, here's the thing. I would ask then. How do we simplify this? So how do you say that in plain language that this could benefit somebody?
Well, here I tell you what it basically what it'll allow you to do on. And this is a real broad general statement, but it allows you to transfer, I guess, say, for example, a house that's worth $1 million. It allows you to transfer that $1 million house, and the gift tax amount is around $600,000. So but you don't get a stepped-up basis. So there's a drawback there, meaning that when a person dies and you transfer your house, then your heirs get it at whatever value it is at the date of death. And so that's really nice because they could turn around, sell that property, and have no capital gains. But in this instance, say you have $1 million house, you gift it, and the person who – there's a gift tax of $600,000. Well, that might be a savings in some respects. But if your basis in that house is like $500,000, well, all of a sudden your heirs get it at $500,000, you know, and they now have a huge capital gain if they turn around and sell the house. So
the capital gain is still there.
It's still there, yeah. Okay. And it depends on, you know, the basis still remains the same. So I guess in that illustration, it would be reduced to some extent, I assume, because if you had a if your gift tax was on a $600,000 value, then I guess the basis, if it was $500,000, it's still a benefit, but it's real tricky.
Basically, well, for those who have a taxable estate, this is a way to get the house out of your estate
right.
at less than what it's worth.
Well, listen,
and especially if you think real estate, and you have to outlive the house by 10 years.
Absolutely. You have to outlive your term, whatever
exactly.
that term is. And there are a number of tables. There are a number of tables that tell you how to figure out all those things.
Right.
Otherwise,
it comes back in your
estate. Otherwise, it comes back. Yeah. If mm-hmm. you die between, if you set it up to live for, say, 8 years or 10 years or whatever it might be, and you die on year six, then it's a waste. You know, it doesn't count.
Well, if you had a large estate, and let's just give an example. Say you had a house worth $2 million, but that was your cost basis. You dumped the money in. You thought, mm-hmm. hey, I'm going to buy this house. It's the dream house I'm going to live in. But boy, my estate's big. Well, with the lifetime exemption, you could give your kids the house now.
Yeah.
Just give it to them now. Yeah. It's totally out of your estate. It's never going to come back into the estate.
The problem with that is you lose control of the house. Your kids could sell it out from under you, and you're gone. The cuper lets you retain.
You sign a lease agreement with them.
Yeah, you could. You sign a lease agreement
with them that you can lease that house as long as you're alive, and you pay them a rent, a fair market rent.
In fact, that's one of the things that that happens in the Cupert situation, as I understand it, is that that at the end of the term, if they're still alive, a lot of times they rent it back from the kids. You know, but you know, there again, the problem is, depending on how old you are and all that kind of stuff. Suppose you're at if you're a retirement age, no one knows how long you're going to live. I mean, everybody, you know, if you're in good health and all, you can kind of hope that you're going to make it another 10 or 15 years, but maybe not.
Well, you're really rolling the dice, though, because if you have that for an 8 to 10-year period and you pass away.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything you paid to do the trust is gone.
It's like you didn't do it at all. I mean, really.
You're just out your administrative costs is all.
Depending on what the attorney charged to do the Cuper, you know, I've seen some charge, you know, anywhere from $4,000 to $10,000.
Yeah, I mean,
talking a lot of money.
Yeah, it could. I don't know how, you know, it would depend on all of that stuff. But it's one of those things that you kind of wonder if it wouldn't be more prudent to do some other things, you know, just some out and out smaller gifts, maybe some cash gifts instead that don't have the capital gains issue going on.
With the lifetime exclusion, and if you had that large of an estate, why would you dink around with the house? The house is going to pass to them on a stepped-up basis, and it, and if you can get the estate down to a reasonable amount anyhow, a husband and wife right now can give up to $10.5 million. So you could pretty much give everything else of your estate away, you know, if you wanted to, although I wouldn't recommend it. But that house, you're going to live in it as long as you want. I don't know. That doesn't. It seems like an expensive thing to me to roll the dice.
Yeah, you're rolling the dice. It seems to me that if you're really looking to, if you can do this, if you're really looking to, you know, maximize the benefit of everything with the least complication, if you have life insurance already, or if you qualify, or you can get life insurance based on your health and everything and your age, then maybe a better course of action would be to create an islet, an irrevocable life insurance trust, and then that way you get the life insurance proceeds out of your estate, and then you provide liquidity for the child or children, so that they get the insurance proceeds tax free, and it's out of your estate, and they then get to use that to pay off the inheritance tax. Now maybe that's not.
Yeah, to me that would be a more realistic thing, because the islet. There are life insurance policies, and I'm not talking about MECs, which are modified endowment contracts, which don't give much life insurance, but there are actual life insurance contracts that you can get that are guaranteed to pay up to age 120. Now, not too many people I know live to be 120.
There was this lady on the news who was 108 yesterday.
Yeah, but she got 12 years to go.
Yeah.
But that to me is, we're all going to die someday. The thing is, if I'm in my late 70s or 80, and I'm gonna do a strategy that's gonna run out 8 to 10 years. If you're 80, you've already exceeded life expectancy, because it's 78 in America today. So you're already playing with the house's money. You know, you've spent yours. You're now playing with the house, and I'll tell you what. That extension time to say you're going to beat it by another 8 years, that's a pretty big gamble, I would think.
Well, the other thing that comes into play here, I think, is that, and I find this with some of my clients, and I can't say that there are lots and lots of clients that worry about federal and estate tax, quite frankly, that I have, because that means $10 million. That's a lot. You know, there are some people who certainly worry about Oregon tax, but by the same token, even those who do have enough money that they would really worry about federal tax, a lot of times what they don't have they may have a high risk tolerance, but they really don't have a high tolerance for complexity, and they don't like to lose control of their money. One of the things that, you know, that happens is the more tax savings you can get, more often than not, the more control you give up to get there. And so, and the more complexity that you add to your plan, and a lot of people say, to heck with that, you know, just let them pay the dang tax.
That's where an islet can come in very handily, because an islet, if your kids or your heirs don't want to do the islet, they're going to lose a lot more than you're going to lose by not doing the islet. So it really puts the onus back on the beneficiaries to do the right thing. Where sometimes if you're giving up a house or something, then, you know, hey, maybe we're going to change the rent equation here. That might be a little different situation.
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, go ahead and make my day. Throw me out of my house. See what happens.
so, but I can see where that can be a problem. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break and come back with the tax investigator, because I know after Kevin got challenged on that tax code there, I'm sure he's going to have some exciting things to talk about with the tax code. You're listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be right back with the tax investigator, and this is your year in review in 2014.
Legal rights and responsibilities are involved. You need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
You are listening to Investing Simplified, and my theme song doesn't get to be played as long as Carl's. He likes to rub that fancy song into our faces because it's so cool, I guess. So we'll just... That's right. But this is our year-end show, and if you have any predictions, give us a call. We want to hear your predictions, whether it's stock market, whether it's sporting world, whether it's politics. Let us know. We'd... like to hear your...
I do want to mention about our predictions for the Super Bowl again this year that we made at the start of the show.
You remember
these? Way back when, yeah.
You went back and listened to the show, didn't you?
Well, yeah. No. I just was going to say that I did pick the Seahawks and the Broncos to do a repeat in the Super Bowl.
Okay. So,
I must confess that the Bills didn't make it, but they did a pretty darn good job this year.
You know what, Carl?
There's always next year.
I was very impressed with the Buffalo Bills this year. I thought Carl might be in heaven because they may hit the playoffs.
They might even, yeah. They were close, but
they get a quarterback, they could do.
Yeah, I was gonna say if they get a quarterback, it would be nice.
I think I predicted Seahawks and New England, so
That's a good
Well, today on the Tax Investigator, we're gonna take a look at seven estates that did not have an estate plan and see what the results of their planning or lack thereof was. And these are all names that you've heard throughout the last century or so, and so we will get right into it. So the first estate we're going to take a look at is from 1913. A fella named J.P. Morgan did not have an estate plan. And he had an estate worth $17 million. He ended up paying $12 million in taxes. His beneficiaries only got $5 million. 70% of his estate went out the door for not having an estate plan. Number two, John D. Rockefeller. No estate plan. Or if you will, just basically had a will with no provisions for tax planning. He had an estate worth $27 million when he died in 1937. $17 million of that went to taxes. Heirs ended up with $10 million, 64% of his estate. After all the taking advantage of workers and all the things that he did throughout
Kevin, he gave most of it back to the government. Even so, if you project that, and you said that was 1927? Yeah, what would $10 million be worth today?
That's true, 1937, exactly. Yeah. Number three, in 1948, there was this fella named Alvin Ernst, a CPA otherwise known as Ernst & Young. No estate plan. Almost $13 million. He gave $7 million of it to the government.
Isn't that a little ironic to you?
It is.
Wow.
It is. So getting a little closer, we've got this gal in 1962 called, whose name was Marilyn Monroe. And she had a little smaller estate compared to these guys, only $820,000 that went through probate. And she gave half of that, more than half, to taxes, almost $450,000. So a more modest estate. Number five, this guy named Elvis. 1977, he passed away with $10 million. He gave over $7 million of it to in taxes. That's of all of the percentages we're looking at here, that was 73% of his estate gone to taxes.
But you know what? That estate is still making money every single year.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true. They haven't done bad with whatever was left. Number six, in 1981, William Holden, a name
actor
that
yep.
some may know. $6.6 million back in 1981. He didn't do too bad, but $4 million of it went to the government in taxes. 61% went to taxes. And then the last and final estate, 2010, fella named George Steinbrenner did not have an estate plan in place. He had an estate worth over $1 billion. And how much did he pay in taxes?
Zero. He died the right time.
He died the right year.
In the no estate tax window.
That's exactly right.
Wow.
So,
leave it to George. Good planning.
That's exactly right. If he had died a year earlier, he would have paid, in 2009, he would have paid almost half of it in taxes, $500 million. And if he had died in future years, it would have been a little less due to the lesser rates. But I guess this brings up two questions. One question is, are you going to roll the dice and hope you die in a 0% tax year? I don't foresee any of those in the future coming up.
I don't think those are going to happen again. That was a once-in-a-lifetime shot.
And the second question is George really dead?
Or the other question is, what were the circumstances of his death?
That's exactly right.
Sounds like a good novel, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, the other question is, do you feel lucky, punk?
Very good. Very good. So what's interesting is we're able to look at all of these people's gross estate because they had a will or didn't have a will, and it went through court, and we're able to take a look at it. And if you have a trust...
Yeah, there's no public record. Unless somebody gets in a lawsuit, which when they're big estates, a lot of times they do, I suppose. But even so, there are a lot of estates that are quite substantial that go through when there's absolutely no publicity. They file their tax returns. That's the only place that you would ever know what's going on. And you don't get that unless you're them. And,
the government.
So,
I thought you were going to bring up Joe Robbie, who is the owner of the Miami Dolphins, who had a gigantic estate. And in fact, they had to sell the Dolphins and the stadium to pay the estate taxes. Hmm. And it was at that time, I think he died before George did, when we had an estate tax problem. And I mean, his family just bought the farm on it.
Gave it all back.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, over half. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So a question for our resident attorney then is, if a will is public, and that's where creditors get notice that, hey, this person has died and you have a window to come and make a claim for whatever you think the estate owes you, how does that work with a trust?
Ah, very good question. It's called the honor system. Yeah, how about that? With a trust, it is the trustee's responsibility to identify, locate, and notify any known creditors. And beyond that, as a practical matter, if a period of months goes by, you know, the creditors, real creditors, usually, you know, mail stuff like statements and, you know, bills and things, and they usually pop up. However, it can be problematic, and that is one of the problems with some, you know, living trust type situations. Is safe, and the case that comes to mind is a case in which the person who died was a dentist, had a fairly substantial estate. Had a nice trust, distributed all the stuff. Nobody, nothing unusual about it at all. However, it turns out that about a year or so before he died, he had a car accident. Didn't say much about it. Well, guess what? The person who was involved in the accident with him was injured. And, you know, 1 year, 364 days later, That is one day before the statute of limitations expired. He's been dead a year, but nonetheless, he and all the money's been distributed. Well, now this claim comes, and it ostensibly exceeded the value of his insurance policy on his car. So the next thing he's being sued, and they had to track down the people and get the money to pay up the difference.
So. Now, Carl, in a case like that, would it be proportionately charged to each of the benefactors of his estate?
Generally, yeah. Yeah, what would basically happen is usually they come after the trustee, and then the trustee has to go after the beneficiaries to get the money back. So, ultimately.
So if the trustee can't get the money back, let's say Uncle Louie took the money and went to Vegas and blew it. So is the trustee liable or is Uncle Louie?
Trustee's liable, first of all, and then the trustee has a right to go after the
Uncle Louie.
Uncle Louie. And so that's a problem because, you know, that's one of the things that trustees always want to distribute the money very, very quickly. And I always say, you know, let's do this in an orderly fashion because we want to make sure there are no creditors. And I usually ask people, I said, you know, has dad been in any automobile accidents? Or in the case of a professional person, has anyone discovered anything in his practice that might be a malpractice claim? Because there can be some issues with that kind of thing. But as a general rule, most people know whether or not they have any creditors or not. And then again, a lot depends on how much the money, and a lot of times there aren't many beneficiaries. And the beneficiaries are, you know, the family members, and so they're easy to identify. But I often say, you know, you might want to think about not just splurging on the money and spending it right
away. What are the statute of limitations on malpractice claims?
2 years from the 2 years from the date that you would that you know you have been injured by the malpractice. So that's a little iffy because
wow, that could be
yeah,
forever.
That could be a long time. So it can be a very difficult thing to, so it can, you know, and that is one of the things that if you really think there is something like that lurking out there, you can actually, with a living trust, you can go to court and file it almost as a probated. That kind of defeats the purpose in a sense. But if you're worried about that, if you really have those unknown claims out there and you're really pretty sure that you want to cut those off, then you can do that. And you have the 4-month cutoff period, and you have it's just essentially like doing it in probate anyway. I haven't seen anybody do that yet, but I would consider it if I thought that there was a real big claim out there. Although, if you think that there's a big claim out there, you probably know who the claimant is, and so the inclination would be to send them a notice of the estate. So,
very good, and that's the tax investigator for today.
Well, we'll be right back with the Knowledge Trust. You're listening to Investing Simplified. If you've got a question, pick up the phone, give us a call, 503-417-7626, or toll free, 800-990-0750. Investing Simplified. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
My name is Money.
All right, this is the time when we all get here kind of a free-for-all. And if you have a question, you can pick up the phone, give us a call at 503-417-7626 or toll-free 800-990-0750. And as 2014 comes to an end, I would just say I hope you all had a very Merry Christmas, and I would say also that in the exuberance of everybody celebrating the holidays, please be careful out there and don't imbibe too much with alcohol and be careless out there, because this is the time of the year when a lot of people unfortunately end up in a bad accident or somebody gets hurt, and it's really not worth it to celebrate that way. So be careful out there and enjoy your family, and as we like to say, live to fight another day and enjoy life and stay part of it.
Amen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very easy to get hung up celebrating and doing those things, and this is the time of year where you got to be careful. And by the way, I understand next week we're supposed to be getting some really cold weather down here.
Sounds like, you know, we were talking about predictions. It seems like this weekend, you know, the mix of the NFL playoffs kind of gets fixed. I think the who's in the playoffs gets fixed as of today and tomorrow. I think. So.
Yeah, I think Sunday is going to be – yeah, everybody's playing. Sunday's the last day, and so everybody's playing. So we'll pretty much know, and hopefully the Seahawks will have home field advantage throughout the playoffs, which would be a big, big thing.
And especially if it rains well. You know.
Well, I still think the Seahawks are the team to beat in the National Football League.
When their defense is playing like that, it's going to be pretty tough.
Yeah,
for teams,
and I think Peyton Manning kind of pulled the card out, because he's kind of hinting that if they can go win it all, this might be his. He might retire.
Interesting.
So that's one of the things coming out of Denver right now that Peyton Manning has discussed. Maybe possibly this could be his last year, and if he could go out winning the Super Bowl, it'd be like John Elway did.
Well, I don't think at the beginning of the year anybody could have predicted Mike Riley would have ended up at Nebraska by the end of the year. Boy, that was a shocker, in my opinion.
No, I think Mariota winning the Heisman Trophy, though a lot of people thought he was going to win it, and you're exactly right. Nobody would have ever predicted that Mike Riley would leave Oregon State and go to Nebraska.
I'm sure he didn't even know.
No, yeah. No.
Well,
I'm sure,
know, it's
I'm
one
sure
of those offers you can't refuse, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I got to think at Riley's age, this is probably his last coaching job. And what a great opportunity for him. And everything I've heard about him is he's a nice guy, a nice person to be around, and is a genuine good guy. So I'm happy for him.
Well, and it sounds, you know, I'm guessing that Nebraska said, well, you know, we have a big program, we have lots of money compared to Oregon State. Let's get the guy who gets the most out of his money. You know, let's get the guy who really makes the less than top-notch players play well.
Well, that is the reputation he has.
Yeah.
He has a reputation of getting the most out of less talent than anybody in the Pac-12, for sure, and probably in college football. So,
well,
going to Nebraska, he's going to get some pretty big farm boys.
Yeah, well, since 2000... the Beavers have had the best home record against top 10 teams in the whole nation. And that includes Nick Saban playing a top 10 team at Alabama. And you go down the list, it's Mike Riley at Research Stadium in Corvallis. He's 5-5 against top 10 teams.
Well, no, there's a duck coming out rooting for a Beaver. Wow.
Hey, Mike
Holy
Riley's
cow.
He's worth getting behind. He's a good guy.
That well, he is a good guy, and
yeah.
I hope he does. I just hope Oregon can close the deal.
Yeah,
I hope Oregon can. Since we're having the very first playoff, it would be nice to see the Pac-12 team walk away with all the marbles.
I predict the Ducks beat the spread against Florida State, 9 points.
Well, I think they will too, and I think Alabama will beat Ohio State decisively, and And I'll even go as far as to predict that on January 12th, the Oregon Ducks will be national champions.
Hey, I like the sound of this.
I like the optimism already.
That's right.
It sounds good.
Yeah.
Coming from and actually, that's that. I'm humbled because that's coming from a Husky fan, and
that's correct.
I got to admit, that's really pretty.
That's correct.
Magnanimous, Jack. Pretty good deal.
I think you'll also see the Huskies win on the 2nd of January when they play Oklahoma State.
The College Football Playoff Committee did a great job assembling matchups this year in the bowl games. Not just the top two semifinal games, but the rest of the games down the slate have all been interesting. Instead of a number six team being matched up by contract to an unranked 6-6 team, we've got good matchups all the way down.
You know, the bowl games have been very good so far, and I'm trying to think who. I think Southern Cal's playing Nebraska.
I think so.
Today.
Yeah.
I think it's today.
Yeah.
And so there's been some really good matchups, really good teams. So it's great to see that. And I think that's one of the things people kind of were getting kind of sour about the bowl games, because you'd have a number one playing a number 12 or a number 20 or a top 10 playing somebody that wasn't even the top 25. And now you're just not seeing that. You're seeing really good games. And I think that's what they need to do in college football. But there's already a big movement now to move it to a final eight instead of a final four. So it'll be interesting to see over the next couple of years.
Pretty soon the Sweet 16? Or
Well, you know, I think a couple of the I think it's the Big 12, which is the ones that kind of got shorted on this thing, and they feel that they should have had a team in the playoffs, and we'll see how they do in their bowl games. But they have a legitimate complaint there, I think. But we'll see. I think the top four teams, the only ones of the top four teams I really wonder about is Ohio State, because they played in a very weak division. So that would be the only one. But, you know, hey, if they come out and beat Alabama, I got nothing to say then. I'd have to say that they did a heck of a job.
Yeah.
So, well, listen, this is our last show of 2014. We wish you all a very happy new year, and we will talk to you in 2015. So that's it for Investing Simplified for the year. Have a great new year.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. Financial Group, Wealth Management. We do investing simplified.